Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Theophrastus, the other philosopher besides Aristotle. So we'll hear about him. He's one of these philosophers who are sort of deep inside philosophy, sort of hidden, obscured, like a minor star covered by Aristotle. Now, would the ordinary person want to know about him? Perhaps not. Perhaps if you're of the mind that you only want to know popular approved facts and approved knowledge, and the actual knowledge out there is perfectly okay for everybody else, it's okay for you, then probably don't listen to this. But he's interesting to me because he's someone who's done stuff, and but very few people understand what he's done. So it's Theophrastus. Theo, T-H-E-O, F-R-A-S, Fras, Dos. Theophrastus. By the way, how you actually pronounce it, I don't know how you do it. I'm going to read the Wikipedia article on him, because I just was reading another book and realised, oh God, you know, he's someone I know about. There was also a sort of rather light treatment of philosophers, whether they believe in the infinite change or not, and their ability to try and work out what is the particle of knowledge and what nature is. A Greek narrative native of Estros in Lesbos, so I think he was in this island, was the successor to Aristotle in the peripatetic school. So peripatetic is when you go for a stroll and you walk with people and see what you can get. He came to Athens at a young age and initially studied in Plato's school. After Plato's death, he attached himself to Aristotle, who took to Theophrastus in his writing. When Aristotle fled Athens, Theophrastus took over as head of the Lyceum. So I think there's a little bit more than that. I think they actually were pupils together. We'll find this out. But the Lyceum is the Greek wolf. Aristotle was Apollo god, Apollo the moon god. They had a version of it, a wolf variety of it, and he had a head there. So as academy means nothing to do with what we modern think of academy. It's just the name of a particular house. Lyceum would be equivalent to the shopping centre or something like that. Theophrastus presided over the peripatetic school for 36 years, during which time the school flourished greatly. He is often considered the father of botany for his work on plants. After his death, the Athenians honoured him with a public funeral. His successors, as head of the school, were Strato of Lampsacus. The interests of Theophrastus were wide-ranging, extending from biology to physics to ethics to metaphysics. His two surviving botanical works, Inquiry into Plant, Historia Plantarum, and Causes of Plants, and you've got to actually understand Aristotle had four causes developed from the Plato school, and it's form, substance, what drives it, and the other cause is what you cause with it. So that's what it means. Were important influences on Renaissance science. There's also surviving works on moral characters, on sense perception, on stones, and fragments of physics and metaphysics. In philosophy, he studied grammar and language, and continued Aristotle's work on logic. So it is interesting that there's, I think you had, I've really got to really think of the various schools there was basically rhetoric and grammar, but grammar is not what we think about. It's that the grammar is the structuring of ideas rather than the structuring of sentences. It's trivia and quadrivia, as subjects. So I'll just have to go back to really restudy that. So this is the medieval schools going through. So the medieval school of logics, of thought, really grew out of the ancient school. In philosophy, he studied grammar and languages and continued Aristotle's work on logic. He also regards space as a mere arrangement of positions of bodies, time as an accident of motion, and motion necessary for consequence of all activities. In ethics, he regarded happiness as depending on external influences as well as virtue. It's interesting because we scientists now have a very precise idea of space. Most of the biographical information on Theophrastus was provided by Diogenes Laertius, Lives and Opinions of Eminent Philosophers, written more than 400 years after Theophrastus' time. He was a native of Eros in Lesbos. His given name was Tritomus, but he later became known by the nickname of Theophrastus, given to him, it is said, by Aristotle to indicate, whatever that means. Good on you, Aristotle. So Aristotle's even obliterated his real name. The aggressive conversation from the ancient god to phrase divine expression. After receiving instruction in philosophy in Lesbos from one of the Acropolis, he moved to Athens, where he may have studied under Plato. He later became friends with Aristotle. When Plato died in 348 to 7 BC, Theophrastus may have joined Aristotle in his self-imposed exile from Athens. I think that's what they think happened. I don't know, no, that does make sense. When Aristotle moved to Mytilene in Lesbos, it's very likely that he did so at the urging of Theophrastus. I think that's actually, now that begins to make sense. It seems that it was on Lesbos that Aristotle and Theophrastus began their research into natural sciences. I think this is where Aristotle studied the chicken and egg problem. So that begins to make sense. Theophrastus probably accompanied Aristotle to Macedonia when Aristotle was appointed tutor to Alexander the Great in around 343 BC. Around 335 BC, about 10 years later, Theophrastus moved with Aristotle to Athens, where Aristotle began teaching at the Lyceum. When, after the death of Alexander, anti-Macedonian feeling forced Aristotle to leave Athens, Theophrastus remained behind as the head scholar of the Peripatric School. That's where you just walk around and chat. A position which he continued to hold after Aristotle's death in 322. There you go. Aristotle, in his will, made him guardian of his children, including Nicodemus, with whom he was close. Aristotle likewise bequeathed him his library, his original works, and designated him as his successor of the Lyceum, which is obviously pretty strange because he's there already. Academus of Rhodes also had some claims to this position, and Aristarenus is said to have resented Aristotle's choice. Theophrastus presided over the Peripatric School for 35 years and died at the age of 85, according to Diogenes. He's also said to have remarked, "We die just when we are beginning to live." Well, he could have said that. Under his guidance, the school flourished greatly. There were, at one period, more than 2,000 students, Diogenes affirms, and at his death, according to the terms of his will preserved by Diogenes, he bequeathed to it his garden with house and colonnades as a permanent seat of instructions. The comic poet Menander was among his pupils. His popularity was shown in the regard paid to him by Philip, Cassander, Ptolemy, and by the complete failure to charge an impiety brought against him. He was honoured by a public funeral, and the whole population of Athens honoured him greatly, followed him to the grave. Oh, well. He was succeeded as head of the Lycaenaeum by Strato Lampacus, whatever that means, writings. Okay. The list of Diogenes, giving 227 titles, it appears that the activities of Theophrastus extended over a whole field of contemporary knowledge. His writing probably differed little from Aristotle's treatment of the same themes, though supplementary in detail. Like Aristotle, most of his writings are lost works. Thus, Theophrastus, like Aristotle, had composed at first and second analytic, whatever that means. He's also written books on topics. So analytics is a way of thinking, and then topics. Analysis of syllogism. Now, it's syllogy and sophism. I've got to remember what a syllogy is. Syllogism. I'll have to remember that. I think syllogism, syllogistic thought, is a really low quality thought, but I've forgotten what syllogism is. And affirmation and denial, as well as the natural philosophy, and heaven, and on mythological phenomena. In addition, see, I can well imagine that it would be very easy to think in those days, because there'd be not much happening, not much distraction. In addition, Theophrastus worked on warmth and cold, on water, fire, sea, coagulation, melting, various phenomena of organic and spiritual life, and on the soul, on experience, on sense perception, also known on the senses. Likewise, we find mention of monographs of Theophrastus on the early Greek philosophers of Anaximander, Anaxagoras, Empedocles, Archelaus, Diogenes of Apollonia, Democritus, which were made use of by Simplicius and Xenocrates against the academics, and a sketch of the political doctrine of Plato. So academics are in the rival school to Aristotle. So Aristotle set up in the Lycaenaeum, and you academics. So one wonders what this is all about. He studied general history, as we know, from Petrarch's lives of Lycurgus, Solon, Astres, Pericles, Nicodemus, Achilles, Lysander, Achilles, Demosthenes, which were probably borrowed from the works of the Lives, but his main efforts were to continue the labours of Aristotle in natural history. This is testified not only by a number of treatises on individual subjects of zoology, on which, besides the title, only fragments remain, but also on his books on stones, and his inquiry into plants, and the causes of plants, see below, which have come down to us in time. Politics, also, he seems to have trodden in the footsteps of Aristotle. Besides his books on the state, we find quoted various treatises on education. Now, that would be an interesting thing to read. Let's read. Now, on royalty, the best state, on political morals, and particularly his works on the laws, on which containing a repeating of laws of various barbarians as well as Greek states, was intended to be a companion to outline to Aristotle's politics, and must have been similar to him. He also wrote on oratory and poetry. Theophrastus, without doubt, departed further from Aristotle in his ethical writings. Also, his metaphysical investigations of motion, the soul, and God. That's rather interesting. I don't know whether you'd be all that interested in it nowadays. Besides his writing, Theophrastus wrote several collections of problems. Now, I do like the problems. I like the medieval book of problems. I have to go in about this book of problems. I just love it. I'm going to have to do, I think it may have been Aristotle's book of problems. I just love it. Out of which some things at least passed into the problems which have become known to the Aristotle, and the commentaries, part dialogues, which probably belong to Eraclus, Megills, Calthusrigs, Megritos, and Letters, partly books on mathematical sciences and their history. Aristotle's Book of Problems is just where, as philosophies got refined, problems just flourished. I just love it. The most important of his books are two large botanical treatises inquiring into plants, and generally known as Historia Plantarum, and on the causes of plants, which constitutes the most important contribution to botanical science during antiquity and the Middle Ages. The systematization of the botanical world on the strength of these works, some of the following, Alanus, the father of botany. The inquiry into plants was originally 10 books, of which 9 survive. The work is arranged into a system where plants are classified according to their modes of generation, their localities, their sizes, according to their practices used, such as practical use, such as food, juices, herbs, etc. The first book deals with the parts of the plant, the second book with the reproduction of the plants, and the times and manner of sowing. The third, fourth, fifth books are devoted trees, their types, their location, their practical application. The sixth book deals with shrubs and spiny plants. The seventh book deals with herbs. The eighth book deals with plants which produce edible seeds. The ninth book deals with plants that produce useful juices, gums, and resins. On the causes of plants, it was originally 8 books, of which 6 survive. It concerns the growth of plants. So this is the mechanism within plants, okay? And the influences of the community, the proper times they should be sown and reaped, and the methods of preparing soil, manuring it, and the use of tools, and of smells, taste, and properties, and many types of plants. The work deals mainly with the economical uses of plants rather than the medicinal uses, although the latter sometimes is mentioned. A book on wines and a book on plant smells may have once been part of the complete work. Although the work contains many absurd, fabulous statements, they include valuable observations concerning the functions and properties of plants. Theophrastus detected the process of germination and realized the importance of climates as soils of plants. Much of the information on the Greek plants may have only come from his own observations, as he is known to have travelled throughout Greece and to have a botanical garden of his own. But the works also profit from the reports of plants in Asia, brought back from those who followed Alexander the Great. This is a quote. To the reports of Alexander's followers, he owed his accounts of such plants such as cotton, bayan, pepper, cinnamon, myrrh, and frankincense. Frankincense is obviously a plant out there. Here we go. Theophrastus' Inquiry into Plants was first published in Latin translation by Theodore Garza in 1483. Its original Greek, it at first appeared from the press of Aldus Manlius of Venice in 1495-98. From a third-rate manuscript, which, like the majority of the manuscripts that were sent to the printers' workshops in the 15th to the 16th century, was disappeared. Christian Wilmer identified 2 manuscripts of first quality, the Codex Urbanus in the Vatican Library, which was not made known to J.G. Schieder, who made the first modern critical edition in 1818-21, with excerpts from the Codex Parisiensis. I think I'm reading this correct. Is this on plants? This is one page. So he's got a book on moral characters. His book, Characters, contains 30 brief outlines of moral types. Their first recorded attempt at systematic character writing. The book has been regarded by some as an independent work. Others have claimed to view it that the sketches were written from the time to time by Theophrastus and collected and edited after his death. Others again regard Characters as part of a larger systematic work, but the style of the book is against this. Theophrastus has found many imitators in this kind of writing, notably Joseph Hall, Sir Thomas Overbury, Bishop Earle, and Jean de La Beyre, who also translated Characters. George Eliot also took inspiration from Theophrastus' Characters, most notably in her book of Characters, Impressions of Theophrastus, such, writing the character sketch as a scholastic exercise also originated in the Theophrastus topology. So what is a character sketch? This is beyond my... I don't understand. I think there's either honest characters or dishonest characters. On sensation. A treatise on sensation, perception, and objects is important for the knowledge of doctrines of the more ancient Greek philosophers regarding the subject. A paraphrase and commentary of this work was written by Priscian Lydia in the 6th century. With this type of work, we may connect the fragments of smells and fatigue and dizziness and sweats and swooning and palsy and on honey. Well, there you go. Physics. So he wrote a commentary. Now we've got these bits, and so we can put them together on physics. We also possess fragments of the history of physics. To this class of work belong still extant sections of fire and wind, and on the signs of water, wind, and storms. Various smaller scientific fragments have been collected in editions of Johann Gottlieb Schneider and Frederick Wilmer and Hermann Elstner, whatever that is, metaphysics. Metaphysics, an anachronistic title, whatever it is, in 9 chapters, also known on first principles, was first considered a fragment of a larger work by Elstner in his edition of Theophrastic Metaphysica Bonn in 1890. But according to Ross and Forbes, in their editions, the treatise is complete, and the opinion is now widely accepted. There's no reason for assigning this work to some other author, because it's not noticed. It is not noticed in Hermicus and Androticus, especially as Nicholas of Damascus had already mentioned it. This is the most interesting bit, I find. His treatise on stones, which is used as a source of other lapidaries, for lapidaries until the Lycurgus Renaissance. So this is how you polish up a stone. I think there is various stones that... I think the stones, he discovered the heat charge of stones. Let's see if it's written here. Theophrastus describes different marbles, mentions coal, and which he says is used for heating by metal workers, describes various metal ores, and knew that pumice stones had a volcanic origin. He also deals with precious stones, emeralds, amethyst, onyx, jasper, and describes a variety of sapphire that was blue with veins of gold, and thus presumably lapis lazuli. Whatever that means. He knew that pearls came from shellfish and coral came from India, and speaks of fossilized remains of organic life. Theophrastus made the first known reference to the phenomenon known as pyroelectricity. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. The mineral lignite, probably tourmaline, attracts straw and bits of wood when heated. He considered, this is really interesting, he also considered, that's how I found out about him, I was checking out pyroelectricity. So you can heat something up, and when it heats up, it charges. Pyroelectric is your infrared detectors. He considers the practical uses of various stones, such as minerals necessary for the manufacture of glass. The production of various pigments, such as ochre. Oh well. Such as ochre, and the manufacture of plaster. I can't remember that one. He discusses the use of touchstones for assaying gold and gold alloys, an important property which would require the genius of Archimedes to resolve a quantitative detail when he was asked to investigate the suspected debasement of the crown a few years later. So that's the standard way you would use a touchstone to tell if something's gold. Many rare minerals were found in mines. He mentions the famous copper mines of Cyprus, and even more famous silver mines, presumably lying near Athens, upon which the wealth of the city is based, as well as referring to gold mines. These lying silver mines, which were the property of the state, were usually leased for a fixed sum and percentage of the workings. Towards the end of the 5th century, the output fell, partly owing to the Spartan occupation of Delicae. But the mines continued to be worked through the Strabo records, and at his time the tailings were being worked over. The Posidon speaks of the mines as a thing of the past. The ancient workings, consisting of shafts and galleries for excavating the ore and the washing tables for extracting the metal, may still be seen. Theophrastus wrote on separate work on mining, which, like most of his works, writings are lost. Pliny the Elder is the one who really interesting reading him. Pliny the Elder makes clear reference to his use on stones in his Natural Historia, while updating and making much new information available for minerals himself. Although Pliny's treatment of the subject is more extensive, Theophrastus is more systematic, and his work is comparatively free from fable and magic. Although he did describe Ligurium, a gemstone supposedly formed by Solifluorum of Lynx, the best ones coming from wild males, which is included in many laboratories until it gradually disappeared from view in the 17th century. From both of these early texts was emerged the science of mineralogy and ultimately geology. Pliny is especially observant of crystal habits and mineral hardness, for example. Philosophy. To the extent that Theophrastus followed Aristotle's doctrine, or defined them more accurately, or conceived them in a different forms, and what additional structures of thought he placed upon them, can only be partially determined because of the loss of so many of his writings. Many of his opinions have been reconstructed from works of later writers, such as Alexander of Aphroditus and Simplicus. You've got to remember, Simplicus is not what we think. Logic. Theophrastus seems to have carried out still further grammatical foundation of logic and rhetoric. So, I don't quite understand. Rhetoric is your ability to persuade someone. Logic, your grammar, is your ability to structure your arguments. Since his book on elements of speech, he distinguished the main parts of speech from the subordinate parts, and also directed expressions from the metaphorical expressions, and dealt with emotions of speech. He further distinguished twofold reference of speech to things and to hearers, and referred poetry and rhetoric to the latter. I don't quite understand that. He wrote at length on the unity of judgment, on the different kinds of negation, and on the difference between unconditional and conditional necessity. In his Doctrine on Syllogisms, he brought for the proof for the conversion of uniform affirmative judgments desired differ from Aristotle here and there in the laying of modality of premises upon modality of conclusion. I just know that syllogism is nowadays taken as a logic stupidity. I can't remember what it is. Then in two separate works he dealt with the reduction of arguments to syllogistic forms and the resolution of them. I've got to read the Aristotle's Problems. For the Doctrine of Proof, Galen quotes the second analytic of Theophrastus in conjunction with that of Aristotle as the best treatise that of that doctrine. In different monographs, he seems to have tried to expand it to a general theory of science. This is all trying to work out science without doing any research. To this, too, may have belonged the proposition quoted in his Topics, that the principles of opposites are themselves supposed and cannot be deduced from one the same higher genus. For the rest, some minor deviation from Aristotle definitions are quoted from the Topica Theophrastus. Closely connected with the treatise was upon the unambiguous words or ideas, which, without doubt, corresponded to Book E of Aristotle's Metaphysics. Yeah, so what is syllogism and opposites? Yeah, this is an idea of opposites. Imagine speaking with him, you'd be really it's taken me a while to understand Plato's The Form, Theory of Forms. Theophrastus introduced his physics, because this is physics and metaphysics, with a proof that all natural existence, being corporal or composite, requires principles. And first and foremost, motion is the basis for all change. Denying the substance of space, he seems to have regarded it, in opposition to Aristotle, as a mere arrangement of position of taxis and thesis of bodies. Which is rather interesting, because Aristotle said there had to be an ether. Time, he called an accident of motion without, it seems, viewing it, with Aristotle, as a numerical determinant of motion. He attacked the doctrine of four classical elements, and challenged whether fire could be called a primary element when it appears to be compound, requiring, as it does, another material for its nutrient. Well, that's actually quite smart. You're not such a dumbass, are you? Okay. He departed more widely from Aristotle in his doctrine of motion, since, on the one hand, he extended it over all categories. He did not limit it to those laid down by Aristotle. He viewed motion with Aristotle as activity not carrying its own goal in itself, of that only which potentially exists. He opposed Aristotle's view that motion required a special explanation. He regarded it as something proper to both nature and general celestial systems in particular. So things are naturally in motion, you don't have to cause. This is a quote. Surely then, if life in animals does not need an explanation, or is to be explained only in this way, may it not be the case that the heavens too, where heavenly bodies' movement does not need explanation, or explained in a special way? He recognized no activity without motion, and so referred all activities of the soul to motion. The desires of emotion, the corporal motion, judgment, and contemplation to spiritual motion. The idea of a spirit entirely independent of organic activity must therefore have appeared to him very doubtful. Yet, he appears to contented himself with developing his doubts and difficulties to the point without positively rejecting it. Other peripatrics, like Diocletian, Aristoteles, and especially Strato, developed further his naturalism in Aristotelian doctrine. Theophrastus seems, generally speaking, where the investigation overstepped the limits of experience, to have preferred to develop the difficulties rather than to solve them, as is especially apparent in metaphysics. He was doubtful of Aristotle's teleology, and they recommended that such ideas be used with caution. So, I've got to remember what theology and syllogism is. It means cross. With regard to the view that all things are for the sake at the end and nothing is in vain, the assignation of ends is in general not easy, and is usually stated to be, we must be certain limits to purposiveness and the effort after the best, and not assert it is to exist in all cases without qualifications. Whoa, gee, can you imagine me reading the Aristotle stuff? You're just reading it and going, God, that just my head in, put a few full stops in Aristotle, put a flowchart. So, but they believe that all things had causes. But he did not follow the insistent attempts of Aristotle to refer phenomena to the ultimate foundations, or attempt to unfold the internal connections between the latter and between them and the phenomena. In antiquity, it was the subject of complaint that Theophrastus had not expressed himself with the precision and consistency respecting God, and had understood it at one time as heaven, at another time enlivening breath or enlivening breath, new. Well, that's what God is. Amazing it is. ethics. Theophrastus did not allow happiness resting merely upon virtue or consequently to hold fast, but fast by the unconditional value of morality. He subordinated moral requirements to the advantage, at least, of a friend. He allowed in prosperity the existence of an influence injurious to them. In later times, fault was found with his expression in Callistrenes, "Life is ruled by fortune, not wisdom." That is the definition of pleasure. Likewise, he did not conclude with Aristotle, coincide with Aristotle, seems to have indicated by his titles of two writings, one which dealt with pleasure generally, and the other with pleasure as Aristotle had defined it. Although, like his teacher, he preferred contemplative theoretical to practical life, whatever that means. He preferred to set the latter free from restraints of family and life in a manner which Aristotle would not have approved. I don't quite. Theophrastus was opposed to eating meat on the grounds that robbed animals of life and was therefore unjust. Non-human animals, he said, can reason, sense and feel just as human beings do. Well, there you go, he was a bit of a vegetarian. The portrait, quote-unquote, of Theophrastus. The marble hem figure of the bearded-headed philosopher type bearing explicit inscription must be taken as purely conventional. Unidentified portrait heads did not find many ready markets in post-Renaissance Rome. The bust was formerly in the collection of the Marchese Petro Massimi Palazzo Massimi and belonged to the Marchese El Massimi at the time the engraving was made. It is now in the Villa Albini, Rome, an inscribed bust must often be illustrated in engravings and photographs. A photograph of it forms the frontpiece of Loeb's classical theory, Theophrastus, Inquiry into Plants. So it's probably not him. Okay. Andrew Thivet illustrated in his iconographic compendium what is an alleged portrait plagiarised from the bust, supporting his fraud with the invented tale that he obtained it from the library of a Greek in Cyprus, and that he'd been confirming that he had seen confirming busts in the ruins of Antioch. Well, there you go. And popular culture. That's the last bit. A world is named Theophrastus in the 2014 Firefly graphic novel Serenity. Theophrastus used the name Theophrastus as given name of his pen name alter ego Dr. Zeus. Oh, well, there you go. A board game named Theophrastus was released in 2001. Players complete through a series of alchemy experiments in order to become Theophrastus' apprentice. Well, that's not very interesting. So He's a dude, and yeah, what can you say? He's written a hell of a lot of things, and it's I really want to look up what syllogism is. Thanks a lot for listening. That's Theophrastus.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.